Let's bring in Glenn Healy, Executive Director of the NHL Alumni Association. How are you, sir?
Night. Watching the Leafs score a touchdown and get the convert against the Mighty Ducks. That was that's an entertaining hockey game.
It was
back and forth.
It was a great game. You know what I liked about it is there was, because four goals against, I expected at some point, grumpy Mike Babcock would chastise his team for poor defense, yada, yada. And there was maybe kind of a little touch of that, but by and large, I got the sense that Mike, he was happy with the seven goals. He was happy with the response he got out of the Boston game, and he was happy with the response he got during the game from his team, especially that first line. I mean, I thought, look, I don't know if Saturday's game was Austin Matthews' worst game in a Leafs jersey, but it was his most invisible. And I thought he performed last night against some pretty big boys. I thought he answered his coach last night.
Yeah, and you know, you start looking at some of the plus minus numbers, and you look at a Ryan Kessler, who we look at as one of the better checkers in the league, and he's a dash three. That's ugly. And mm-hmm. our players are all on the plus side. Everyone's contributing, feeling good about the day today. And you know, yeah, Saturday night was a disappointment. That's a really good team that they played. That's been the hottest team in the NHL. And when you start breaking down Saturday's game, what did the game contain? Like turnovers like crazy.
Yeah.
And they pretty much, you know, shored that up when it came to turnovers, you know, just a game later. So a fun game for everybody. Everybody's involved, to you know, the exception of a couple people, some fourth line guys. Everybody's contributing with points. And so, yeah, you're feeling pretty darn good about it. I love this scene where Komarov absolutely got smoked with a big hit, and he gets up and says, "Hey, good hit, buddy. That was a good hit."
Mm-hmm.
I love that. That was something special. But yeah, again, good game for the entire team. No doubt they feel good about it. And you know, hey, we're constantly looking ahead. Well, what's the matchup? Did they play Boston? Do they have a chance? Trust me, when you know, I can tell you that you get into a playoff series, a 2-week war, everybody's got a chance.
Right.
So, you know, we'll get over ourselves for the course of the rest of the season, get in, and then we'll figure out who we play when we play.
I wanted to ask you, though, that game against Boston Saturday, did you take anything away from it other than, you know, Boston's playing really well right now, and they were better than Toronto on that night? And, oh, yeah, by the way, Patrice Bergeron's a pretty damn good player.
Well, I mean, is there anything he can't win other than the Norris and the Vezina? I mean, the guy's won everything.
He should. I'm surprised he's not. I'm surprised, Glenn, you don't hear him in more MVP discussions. I really am. Because to me, he's, well, I mean, I've thought this for a while. I just think he and Kopitar are the two forwards I like watching play the most in the NHL. Not the most exciting, but I love what I get out of them in a two-way game. They make two-way hockey. They make two-way hockey interesting.
Yeah, you'd hard pressed to find a game where he makes mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's never that gaffe, that big negative, that you just don't ever see it. He's just so consistent and dependable, and would be an absolute coach's dream in every single way. You know, yeah, every year talk of the Selke, every year the Lady Bing, every year he's the guy you want on the ice for the last faceoff, the last minute. That's the most dependable kind of player you could ever have. I mean, hey, I played with Steve Larmer when we won the Cup, and Greg Gilbert. I can arguably say that I don't think I saw Greg Gilbert make a mistake the whole year. Like, every puck he had to get out, got out. Everyone had to get in, got in. Steve Larmer, same thing. A complete 200-foot player. But yeah, that, you know, Saturday was a learning curve for this Leaf team. Yeah, this is what you're going to get in a couple months. And so understand the commitment you've got to make, and understand that, you know, mistake-free hockey doesn't mean you're going to commit 20 plus 23 turnovers on Saturday, if my memory tolls me right. I mean, that's way too many times when you've got the puck, you're going the other way, and you give it to someone else to go back your way. So disappointing, but they've moved on, and in the standings, they are solidly sitting where a lot of teams would love to be.
Have you been in that position Freddie Anderson was in last night, skate across the mask? You know, I mean, my first, it's weird. I'm old enough that I think of Clint Malarchuk anytime anything like that happens. I know this wasn't similar, but I think of Clint Malarchuk anytime something like that happens. What went through your mind when you saw that?
Well, I'm surprised that more of that doesn't happen. You know, the skates are, well, they're a weapon,
yep.
First off. They're razor sharp. Pretty much every period, guys get them sharpened, you know. And so so much stuff around the crease and, you know, goaltenders that play most of the game on their knees or are more down than they are up. That I'm shocked it doesn't happen more. Yeah, I've had it happen. Bernie Nichols tried to kick a puck loose from my glove late in the game against San Jose, cut me open for about 30 on my hand. You know, and that's why whenever you get into that conversation about pucks going off skates and in the net or the kicking motion, and you think, well, why are they bothering with that? Well, that's why they're bothering with that, because we don't need Pelé in the crease kicking at pucks where people's hands and, you know, necks and arms are you know, in harm's way. It's dangerous. It's one of the reasons that they have doctors that now have to sit right by ice level. That's mandatory. It's one of the reasons that they have two ambulances at the games, just because if they need to have something medically done, they are right on site, right on call to make it happen. I'll give the NHL full credit for taking those medical procedures in hand. But yeah, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. I really am, especially with the speed of the game and just the everything. What do coaches tell you? Get to the blue paint.
Yep.
Oh, okay. What happens at the blue paint? Stuff like that.
Are we any closer to, do you think, to understanding goalie interference? And the reason I'm asking you this is not so much because of that play, but, you know, I was thinking, watching the Super Bowl this weekend, watching that a couple of reviews, and you know, it seems to me that I'm really siding with Gary Bettman here. I think it was on Primetime where Gary Bettman said that one of the, you know, the issue, if there is an issue right now, he thinks it's that guys are, you're taking a third, fourth, and fifth look to try to make sure you got it right. You know, the idea is take a look at it. If there's not enough evidence to overturn it, then, you know, don't overturn it. Don't go back and look again and again and again. Are we getting close, do you think, to coming to some sort of agreement on how to do this in the NHL? Because, that Super Bowl thing, I don't want it to get to the point where we, you know, in the NFL right now, you don't know what a catch is. I don't want it to get that point in the NHL.
Well, I can tell you that I know very little about football. I'll be right up front. Watch the game. The announcers got it wrong.
Yes.
Are they not the best two in the game? And they got it wrong. So they didn't get it. And yet me, as a guy who doesn't know the rule, looked at it and said, yeah, he's in the course of running for sure. Yeah, that's a touchdown. Okay. So, I mean, hey, I'm just a bystander, and I think I nailed it. That being said, from the NHL standpoint, the whole thing was started with legitimacy of goals. If a puck goes in the net, let's make it legit. Let's say it's a goal. Okay. I'm all for that. I'm embraceful for that. I think it's the minutia of, you know, foot off the blue line. Is that what we really wanted video review for? I don't think we did. I think we've got there. And I think that they're probably looking at that saying the call on the ice should stand more than us going back and looking at five or six replays. And I would say this, if you're going to look at five or six replays, then in the war room, and I would say this to Coley, and I'd say this to Lee, put a referee in there. Put someone who's actually been in that spot, knows where you're standing on the ice, knows what he's looking at. So you just add on to that and give some of the guys that are in there 1,291 days just a day off to take a break. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the most part, I think we've nailed it from a league standpoint. But now we're at the stage where it's the minutia that's getting in the way. And I would agree with Gary, probably, you know, calls on the ice should stand more and just let the referees do their job. And if it's the legitimacy of a goal, then, okay, we can step in and make sure that that does or doesn't happen, because that's where the implications are, playoff or non-playoff. And, I mean, all we have to go is back to, 2000 and whatever, 7, when the Leafs lost in the shootout in the last game of the year. Well, one more goal would have made a difference to them.
The Olympics are starting, apparently. I have to admit, this is the least engaged I've been in the Olympics in some time, and it's for a variety of reasons. What are you expecting from Olympic hockey, Glenn? And I'll ask you, going to watch it?
Of course. I watch any level of hockey. It's an addiction that I have. I need an intervention. My family agrees with it. I'll watch. You know, in some ways, this might be better in the sense that it's just pure sport. You know, some of the best games, Jeff, that I did in the Sochi Olympics were the ones, you know, when like we did the game with Kopitar's team,
right?
And yeah, they had that kid Rasinger, who, you know, has been playing in Switzerland for 16 years and never won an Olympic game. He was the captain of the team, and they won their first game. And there's Kopitar and his dad hugging and crying on the bench, and this kid standing, you know, sitting like two feet away from me, crying his eyes out as a 40-year-old because he'd won his first Olympic game. Those are the, you know, it is about sport, but it's the stories of these athletes. And that's what I want to know from this Olympics. So if we as a broadcast group and CBC tell the stories of these players and the stories of these athletes, that's what sport is. That's what the Olympics are to me. It's not the pushback shift. It's not the matchup. It's not sticks in the lane. Stories about how these guys got to where they are and how they've championed it and how they're going for what would be just pure gold. So I'm in some ways maybe more interested.
Is there has the grumbling amongst NHL players died down now?
Next trick. No. You don't think they want to go?
Well, I thought maybe the fact that they had games to play here would, you know, would keep the lads occupied.
How many hockey players, you know, don't carry a grudge forever? How many Scottish people, you know, don't carry a grudge forever?
The Blair family are notorious grudge carriers.
Oh, yes, the Healy family. We should get together and we'll carry a grudge together. I'll rip you off for something and we'll go forward from there. But, no, it's a dream come true to play for your country. And you know, hey, I was on the charter back with the Finnish team and the Russian team on the first charter after Sochi. And as soon as the last firework was shot into the air, boom, we took off. Mm-hmm. So we're into airspace. And I'm looking at the Russian players, and they're very disappointed. I mean, Olympics in Russia, gosh, what a disappointment. And the Finnish guys who won bronze, they're all on the flight wearing their medals.
Oh, yes.
If you can't put your finger in the air more than a bunch of other guys that you play in the NHL with, I don't know how you can. But that's, you know, that's what players love. They love that Olympic experience, the playing for your country. You don't get it often.
Yeah.
So now we're 8 years away from the next one, or so four, basically.
Yeah.
So, but like a Bergeron, will he be in that Olympics? I don't even know if Crosby will be in that Olympics.
Right.
Kopitar probably won't be. You know, you're going to have a whole generation of players that just because of some decisions lost their chance this time around.
It's funny when you mentioned the Finns. I remember talking to Saku Koivu after he'd taken part in the Olympics, and I was in the Montreal bureau, and I came to the conclusion very quickly that other than, you know, everybody, it's an honor to play for your country, but the Finns probably second only to the Canadians in feeling that way. Right? The Finns, yep, and their loyalty to their hockey association and their country is remarkable. It's pretty close to ours. So I can imagine what that flight would have been like.
Well, a lot of libation on it, I can tell you that.
That's another thing about the Finns.
Yeah. Yes. I spent most of my time with Timo Solani trying to talk him into coming back, but he had already made up his mind at that point. But, you know, the average age of an NHL player today is 23 and a half. Mm-hmm. Okay, that is young. Yep. So if you're 24 and you're playing in the NHL today, this is my news to you players. You're on the back nine of your career.
Right.
So 23 and a half. So not a lot of guys are going to be playing to Bergeron's age or Chara's age. And so, you know, you're going to get a very small window to get a chance to play in that international experience with the entire world watching. And it's not the Saturday night crew that watches Hockey Night in Canada, the diehards. It is your grandmother, it's your mother's sister, it's the entire world that tunes in to see the stories unfold. And that opportunity was missed.
You know, it's interesting, and it kind of dovetails with another question I wanted to ask you. And the Major League Baseball Players Association right now is going through something of a crisis with their with their CBA and with their leadership. I mean, there are a lot of agents. Well, frankly, I mean, there's a bit of a whispering campaign against Tony Clark, the head of the Major League Baseball Players Association, as a result of what we're seeing from the new CBA. Donald Fehr, of course, is formerly executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association. We also, I mean, there's a little bit of tension between some players and Donald Fehr as well, we're led to believe. Do you see in any way, shape, or form these two things coming together and maybe Donald Fehr ending up back with the Major League Baseball Players Association? I'm looking at it from a hockey point of view.
No.
Okay.
No, I think when you go to college and you graduate as a senior, you graduated.
Mm-hmm.
You move on. And I think he moved on from Major League Baseball, did some wonderful things there. Marvin Miller, to me, was the guy who paved the roads. Don got to drive on him.
Right.
I mean, Marvin, to me, is the genius of it all and should be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt. I've got lots of doubts why, but I know why. But
yeah.
Should be. Did so many great things for players and for their association. Built a framework of paying it forward where these guys just have this bond that, you know, hey, we're behind in hockey. We had 25 years of Allan Eagleson.
Right.
You figure that out. I mean, that was our downfall. That was our decisions. But they didn't have that in baseball. But, you know, times have moved on. I mean, Don's done a wonderful job in hockey, and he's 70 years old. And is he up for the fight there? And what's going to have the fight with us? Because for the most part, if you look at every contract that's done for players today, they're all lockout proof. And
yep.
Why? Because they believe it's coming. They
yeah,
think it's
true.
Coming. Whether it comes or it doesn't come, that's what they believe. So if it's not Tony, then it's time to get somebody who you've got faith in, where leadership is simply look behind you. If they're following, they're following. If yep. they're not, then you're not a leader.